Hey, Hicken here. Thanks for checking out the 1010XL On Demand. It's brought to you by Kuhn Flowers. Locations on Beach Boulevard and in Ponte Vedra. Kuhn Flowers wants to be your florist.
And now Richardson goes in motion to the right side. Back to throw. Green under a bit of heat. Turns to Bray. Lost the ball. It's on the ground and he covers it up back at the 24-yard line. Marcus Stroud got his second sack of the game, forcing the fumble. There's the Jacksonville 36-yard line. Hutchinson, head bobbing and weaving as he calls out the signals. Drops to throw, trying to set up the screen. It's going to be pressured. Hit, sacked all the way back to the 44. Guess who? Big John Henderson.
Live from TIAA Bank Field, 1010XL 92.5 FM presents Jaguars Today with your host, Mike Dempsey.
We got to get back down to TIAA Bank Field here shortly, but they're using the studio today. Not that there's a whole lot going on down there. World headquarters is a hopping place.
Yeah, it's not booming right there down there right now, is
no.
it?
No, I get to see you, which is nice.
Right.
We get that connection. You know, Tony's deserted us for the week. And I got to give props to Taylor Dahl because he and I are hardcore. You know, we don't get to talk about other sports or really other teams all that much outside the Jaguars in the National Football League. And that's fine. That's the purpose of the show. And we went in with our eyes open on that. But we were talking about James Harden and Chris Paul and do they like each other or not. You know, the kind of soap opera stuff that you get in the offseason or sometimes during the season. And he goes, all right, 15 seconds to the update for Taylor. And I am just rattling off. You remember that press conference and blah, 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 right up until go. And Taylor just picks up like,
boom,
nobody's business, right? A little behind the scenes here. Good morning, everybody. Welcome back to Jaguars Today. We're on for the next 2 hours talking Jacksonville Jaguar football with you, E. We're going to have Cody Benjamin on.
My boy.
Your boy from CBS Sports, your new fast friend from
right?
CBSSports.com. He is fast friends with a lot of people. I'm not going to tell tales, all right? But he we can't impress upon you enough. He's like, yeah, you know who's blowing up my phone last week. And he's like, I'm not giving away your secrets, E. Don't worry. You know, I'm a big mouth, blabber mouth, but I will hold certain things in confidence. But he knows a lot of people and just has a way of insinuating himself in their lives. It is fascinating to watch that he can navigate any social circle you want with any amount of, I would say, celebrity, mini celebrity, whatever you want to qualify it as.
Josie has to see me, man. I want to see him in action. You tell me Josie can
get you in.
Right.
Once you're in, you'll know everyone. Wherever he gets you in, you're already going to know everybody in there. And you got yourself in at the media party without a credential
this year.
That was pretty slick. You talked your way in there and made a few best friends along the way. That's just kind of your nature.
Right.
We appreciate that, man. It's good stuff. Yesterday we ran a poll that as soon as I log into my Twitter account, I'll give you the final exact results. But we asked people, do you feel more optimistic about the team, less optimistic, or the same from the beginning of this offseason, the end of last year to right now, based on all the news and changes that have taken place with the Jacksonville Jaguars. Obviously, Nick Foles being a big part of that. Coming on board, that's Cody Benjamin at CBS Sports, wrote about Nick Foles and the premise of the story. Can he save the Jaguars? And part of determining whether or not he can save them is defining what saving them means. And he does that in his piece at CBSSports.com. I encourage you to check it out. But Cody will be joining us here coming up in about 15 minutes. And we'll talk about his impression from the outside. Always good to occasionally get some outside views. We get a little close to the situation at times. Yesterday's poll final results are in. And let's see what we came up with. 47% said they feel the same about the team. And I think one of the last responses that I got about that was pretty apropos of the way a lot of people felt. It was simply something along the lines of fool me once, shame on me, fool me twice, shame on you. Or is that, no, fool me once, shame on you. Right, of course. Shame would all be on you, Emmanuel. And if you fool me twice, that's my bad.
You're bad.
My bad, sir. I should have learned the first time. And, you know, in other words, look, I'm not going to get too high or too low because I've seen a lot of things in past years to get excited about. Doesn't mean I'm less optimistic necessarily just because of past seasons, but I'm taking a wait-and-see approach on that. So 47% said they feel the same, 38% more optimistic. I would go in that category, as I said yesterday, simply with the upgrade at quarterback. I think that outweighs any potential negatives that are swirling around, including the absence of Telvin Smith, at least for now, the temporary absence of Yannick Ngakoue and his desire to get a new contract. At 15% are less optimistic about where the Jags stand compared to where they stood at the beginning of the offseason. So that brings us to today's questions of the day. Got a pair of them presented by Gravely Zero Turn Mowers, an American workhorse since 1916. We're spinning this off a piece at ESPN.com in their NFL section. Their NFL Nation writers, such as one Michael Bianchi, DeRocco, that would be. Mike DeRocco, right over. Sorry, DeRocco. I don't see the guy for 2 weeks, and I confuse him with another vertically challenged sports writer. You know, is that stereotyping, typecasting? What is that, E?
That's just funny.
That's just my bad, is what that is. Oh, well. So anyway, DeRocco weighed in from the Jags' perspective, and they had all their team correspondents do this. And they said, basically, rate the offseason in one of these categories for the team you cover. Was an elite offseason? That's a pretty high bar. What's an elite offseason look like? Was it above average? Was it average? Or is it too soon to tell? Well, I would argue that it's too soon to tell almost every time, right? Maybe the Lakers are having an elite offseason because they got Anthony Davis. We'll see what else they do in the NBA. But generally, it's too soon to tell, right? Kind of like fool me once, shame on who's that? Shame on you again, right?
Shame
yes,
on you.
Still shame on you. Why can't I get that right off the bat? So it's kind of like that, right? Too soon to tell. So we bumped too soon to tell out of the poll. Because, honestly, you could always say it's too soon to tell. So we asked you today if you had to rate the Jaguars' offense to this point, or offseason to this point, excuse me, or offense, by placing it in one of these categories, which category would you choose? And tell us why you feel that way with a little more detailed response. You can vote on this Twitter poll at MD_1010XL. E's going to retweet it if he hasn't already on the 1010XL account as well. Your choices are, was it an elite offseason, above average, average, or even below average? And tell us why you think that is the case. We had a bonus question out there today as well. And this one lets you get a little bit more creative than just clicking that one button, which is the minimum you have to do to participate on question number one, which is come up with which three words do you think would best describe the Jacksonville Jaguars all season to this point? Could be a little three-word phrase. It could be three different standalone words. Could be whatever you want. What three words best sum up what's happened this all season with the Jacksonville Jaguars from your perspective? Have some fun with it, and we'll check out those responses throughout the course of the show. You can, of course, reply on social media at MD_1010XL and at IME to the T on Twitter, on the Jaguars Today Facebook page, or, of course, on the phone line or the text line, which is built by Lifetime Enclosures. Emmanuel wasn't aware of that until I told him that yesterday.
I wasn't.
Back from vacation and just spilling knowledge all over the floor here. 641-1010, the number for either of those latter two options, the phone lines or the text line, built by Lifetime Enclosures. Cody Benjamin from CBSSports.com. Can the Jaguars be saved by one Nick Foles? What does being saved mean in the eyes of Cody Benjamin, and where does he come down with the final verdict? We'll discuss that with him coming up next. This is Jaguars Today. Mike Dempsey and E to the T in here with you on 1010XL and 92.5 FM.
Now more Jaguars Today on 1010XL 92.5 FM.
What if the Jaguars don't want to be saved, E? What if they don't want to be saved? What if they don't think they need to be saved? We're going to find out what Cody Benjamin of CBS Sports thinks, whether or not Nick Foles can save the Jaguars, whether they think they need it or not. I think they need it. 5-11, too many losing seasons in the last decade, with 2017 looking like the aberration at this point. Still a talented roster. An upgrade at quarterback for sure. How much of an upgrade will determine that as we watch the season play out. Can Nick Foles even play all 16 games, something he's yet to do in an NFL campaign? Joining us now from CBSSports.com with Mike Dempsey here on Jaguars Today, Cody Benjamin. Good morning, Cody. How are you?
I'm doing great. Thanks for having me on.
Oh, thank you for giving a little national attention to a team here in Jacksonville that doesn't always get it, doesn't always deserve it necessarily, but you did seem to recognize, before we get too much into the impact Nick Foles is going to have, that there is some holdover talent, despite the fact that the record went in the wrong direction last year. Just in general, how talented of a roster did Nick Foles join, in your opinion?
Well, you know, that's a tough question. I mean, because, you know, 2 years ago we're looking at a team that obviously was within one victory of going to the Super Bowl. I mean, there's got to be talent on that team. But I think a lot of it, you know, comes down to that defense because, you know, people have talked up the Jags defense for several years now. Obviously, they had some problems last year. Maybe some of that can be attributed to whatever was going on in the locker room. You don't have a big piece in Telvin Smith coming back this year, but there's still pieces there. I mean, Jalen Ramsey, I mean, you can go across Miles Jack. You find guys that are, you know, pieces of a contender. The things that really concern me, and you know, obviously we'll be talking about Nick Foles, is on the other side of the ball. And I think to bring in John DeFilippo, I think maybe that's the best offensive addition outside of Foles that they made, even though he had some public struggles with the Vikings at the end of last season. But really, yes, the offense that kind of concerns me, and I guess you might have had the same concerns when they were close to getting to the Super Bowl with Blake Bortles at quarterback. But overall, I think this is a team that, you know, with a quarterback in place, with an offense that does enough, and the defense does its job, I think that they're a playoff contender.
And how much is it simply that Foles is an upgrade? He may not be elite, as you laid out. There are a handful of quarterbacks that you would expect, even if it doesn't work out that way, that if they have any kind of competence around them, they're going to make their team a playoff contender. He may not be in that category, but just in terms of being a stabilizing force, a more accurate quarterback, a guy who shined in the postseason consistently over the last few years, how much of an upgrade do you think he is over Blake Bortles?
I think he's a big upgrade. I mean, that I think there's no question about that. And I know that, you know, I'm sure there were some, and I'm not sure where you stood on Blake Bortles, but I know there were some people in Jacksonville that, you know, kind of like Nick Foles had earlier in his career with the Eagles, there's always, you know, a section of the fan base or the media that thinks he's a little bit better than he is or a little bit worse than he is. I think Foles actually fell into that category, but I do think he's a clear upgrade on Bortles. But the whole idea of, and really that's where, the story that we did on it this week was, you know, the question is, can Nick Foles save the Jaguars? And I think the bigger question is, you know, what does it mean to save the Jaguars? I think if you're looking for him to turn them into that AFC championship team immediately, I think the answer is no, at least for this year. But I think if you're looking to, if saving the Jaguars means getting them back to, you know, the precipice there of the playoffs, I think he's your guy. I think, like you said, you know, elite quarterbacks, can call maybe, I don't know, there's four or five guys in the NFL where if you put them on any team, you know, you're guaranteed a shot. But for the majority, that huge middle section of these good, maybe great quarterbacks, you need help. And I'm not sure if he's got enough help in Jacksonville to do that, at least on the offensive side of the ball.
That's something we're all going to have to find out, because you're right. If you just took the offensive skill players alone and match them up with other teams, particularly the pass catchers, they probably wouldn't fare too well, at least on paper. They've got a chance to prove everybody wrong. Cody Benjamin here with us from CBSSports.com. Cody, you talked about an aspect of Nick Foles' recent postseason performance, the way he won over that locker room in Philadelphia and that kind of cachet and maybe even a little bit of swagger that he brings into Jacksonville because of that Super Bowl ring and MVP award, that you think that he'll be more respected as a player in that room, and that could go a long way. Talk about that if you would.
Yeah, and it's hard because this is a tricky thing where, you know, teams, especially coaches, they'll talk this up a lot about having, you know, good culture helps win football games. You know, we've heard that a million times. And I think that, you know, you at the end of the day, you have to be able to play football well, too. And Nick Foles has done that. But I think if there's one thing that we can give him credit for, it's being a universally respected and admired leader. And, you know, you can't say that for every single quarterback. And on top of it, this is a guy who won a Super Bowl, who came up big when he needed to. But yeah, you look at, I mean, Carson Wentz is the guy in Philadelphia now, but there are still players on that team who, if you would, you know, if you would have brought Nick Foles back as the starter, they would have been absolutely fine with it. And that's probably an understatement. I think, you know, Nick Foles is not necessarily this rah-rah, you know, in-your-face kind of guy. But he is just, I really can't state it enough. I mean, coming from Philadelphia, he was beloved, I mean, by teammates, eventually by fans, but by coaches. This guy is just someone who, he comes into work, you know, he treats his teammates with respect. And I think that, yeah, that does go a long way when you're coming off a year where there were so many quarterback questions, where you've got locker room concerns. I think there's no better guy, at least character-wise, that they could have brought in.
Yeah, and, you know, early returns are he's picked up right where he left off. He's really made a point to reach out to all the players on the roster, really kind of establish himself as, hey, I know I'm new, but I am going to be your leader. I almost have to be based on the position I play. Cody, you mentioned locker room issues. I'd like your perspective from the outside. You're not a guy who's in this locker room every day, but you certainly are aware of stories that come out of it. How is the chemistry from your perspective on this football team?
Well, I think, you know, it's really going to be tested once we start seeing them play games. But I would use, even just to relate this to Nick Foles, I mean, you look at the Eagles a few years ago, you know, the year before Doug Peterson was hired, they had a ton of what you'd call locker room, you know, concerns. There was internal discord. There were guys that didn't like, you know, Chip Kelly. There was a lot of mess left over. 2 years later, the Eagles have their first Lombardi Trophy. And I think that's just a good example of how, you know, yes, there can be problems. There's always problems in a locker room. But it's really about, you know, who are the leaders? Is the team performing? And I think they took a big step in at least bringing one in at the quarterback position with Nick Foles. I mean, from the outside, it obviously, it doesn't look great when you have such a talented team, especially on defense, when you had, I guess, all those concerns on that side of the ball. But I really think that, you know, shoring up the quarterback position, you know, again, we'll see where the ceiling is for Nick Foles. But I think that was step one, and they got that done.
Yeah, a quarterback, you could say that pretty much about every team in the National Football League. That's going to be the most critical position. Leonard Fournette staying healthy and performing up to his capability, which he's flashed at times, but I would argue hasn't even strung together for one full season yet, is also an important factor as well. What are your thoughts on Fournette and what he needs to do this year for the Jags to get into that playoff contention mode?
Yeah, I think he's a bigger X factor than I think people realize, and also because, you know, this is a guy who's known to, you know, he pounds it. I mean, this is a guy who takes it up the middle, you know, not someone who's necessarily had, and maybe you can speak better on this, but someone who's had a ton of success running out of the shotgun, which is where Nick Foles thrives as a quarterback, a guy who's running a lot of run-pass option plays, someone who can make a quick read out of the shotgun. And I don't know that meshes exactly with how Leonard Fournette has worked so far. And so that's where I think John DeFilippo, just, you know, how creative he's going to get this year, you know, I'm interested to see, especially with the run game, because, you know, any way you can help take pressure off Foles is going to be key, especially with, you know, like you mentioned, the pass catchers there aren't necessarily something to write home about. So I think, you know, the run game is going to be huge. Fournette's got to stay healthy. But yeah, the way that they utilize him with Nick Foles is going to be interesting.
Quickly looking at the defensive side of the ball, Cody Benjamin here with us from CBSSports.com. We encourage you to check out his article about whether or not Nick Foles can save the Jacksonville Jaguars and all the pros and cons as to why he may or may not be able to do that. Cody, Telvin Smith made it. You know, it's a strange situation. You don't see this where a guy says, basically, I'm going to take the year off and leaves it open-ended. He's not retiring. He's not quitting. He's just not playing this year at this point in time. He has his faults as a player, but he also has a lot of pluses. League's leading tackle over the last 5 years in total tackles. How much will they miss him, in your opinion, on the field this year?
Yeah, I think you realize when someone's not there, you know, how much that they impacted the game sometimes, and I think that will be the case there. I mean, they have no shortage of veterans on that defense that can make a difference. You look along the front four, you look in the secondary. There's guys that can make up for that. I do think that Obviously, it's a big loss when you have even just a guy who is familiar with the plays, who knows how to trot out there and get the guys lined up. You know, that plays a factor in it. But defensively, I think that's really where, you know, outside of the excitement of just having someone other than Blake Bortles at quarterback, I think defensively, yeah, that's the key for the Jags this year. I mean, that's their bread and butter. And again, I don't know that that's, you know, defense is important. But I don't know that that's, you know, league-wide, this is kind of a more of a macro issue, but I don't know that in today's NFL, I think a high-flying offense that's going to put up points regardless of what happens each week, I think that's probably the best thing you could have to be a Super Bowl contender. But the Jags are built this way. They're built to be a defensive team, and I think Nick Foles fits in as that kind of the guy who's not going to lose you a game. And not to say that in a bad way, but he's set up for this team to ride on its defense, and I don't think they have. I do think they have enough pieces to do that.
Couple more minutes here, Cody. Looking at the AFC South, that's off the top of your head. You don't have to get deep into the analysis. How would you rank the four teams as things stand at this moment? Obviously, a lot to still play out even before the season kicks off.
Yeah, I'm a fan of the Colts. I mean, I think I like what Frank Reich has done there. I know that. You know, we don't want to, I guess, hype them up too much because of their return to the playoffs, the hot streak they had last year. But I think the Colts really have a lot of young core guys. I mean, even just a guy like Darius Leonard, I think that the Colts just have, if Andrew Luck can stay healthy, I think they're dangerous. The Texans, I mean, they're always in the mix. But I think that if it's coming down to, you know, that second team there and the Jags are maybe back in that 9-7, 10-6 territory, I think it's the Texans that they're going to have to really fend off because as long as you got Deshaun Watson, DeAndre Hopkins doing their thing, it's going to be tough to stop. So I think, you know, if you want to slot the Jaguars in there, I think it's looking I think you'd be hopeful to fight for that second spot, and maybe that means a wild card spot. Maybe it doesn't. But either way, I think that the Colts, you know, if I had to peg one other team to beat there.
All right, I'm going to put you on the spot, Cody. This is the final question for you. We put this question out on social media this morning. Up to this point, from the end of last season to this moment, give me three words that you would use to best describe the Jaguars offseason. I know that's a big ask on the spot, but go ahead anyway.
Okay. Three words. So are these separate words?
You can make it
a little phrase.
Anything. You can make it one little phrase. You can make it three words. Whatever three words you think apply best to the Jaguars offseason.
Yeah, that's a good one. Well, I'd say, you know, I'd say reset the culture. I'm going to go with a phrase there. So I think that by bringing in, you know, again, I don't want to oversell Nick Foles, but you can't talk enough about how important the quarterback position is in the NFL. And I think it's important to understand that, yes, Nick Foles is not one of those top five, six, seven guys in the NFL that's going to just change everything. But I think he resets the culture enough in Jacksonville, whether that means by just improving the play of quarterback or whether that means instilling some actual leadership in a locker room that needed it. I think that what was important, because they're still going to rely on their defense, I think what was important was resetting the culture this offseason if things can pay off on the field.
I guess that was pretty clutch on the spot right there. That was well done. I appreciated that one.
That's a tough one. I thought maybe you'd give me one word.
No, you did. You hit it, I thought, pretty well. We'll see if that turns out to be the case and Nick Foles is you know, as important intangibly as he is tangibly for the Jaguars. Cody Benjamin, you can find his work at CBSSports.com. Go click on the NFL page and read his piece on whether or not Nick Foles can save the Jaguars and what exactly saving the Jaguars means. And follow Cody on Twitter like I do at Cody J. Benjamin, spelled just like it sounds. Cody, appreciate you shining a little light here on the 904 area code and joining us this morning on Jaguars Today.
Hey, not a problem. Looking forward to this season. Thanks for having me.
All right, buddy. You got it. We'll talk down the line. Cody Benjamin, CBSSports.com. It's a good piece. And like you said, he said, look, if saving them means winning the Lombardi Trophy, odds are no. But if saving them means putting them in legitimate playoff contention, he was pretty emphatic, I thought, in the piece, if you read it, that he thinks absolutely Nick Foles can do that. Now, he can't do it on his own, but you heard a lot of the circumstances around Nick Foles that Cody thinks are important to get the job done. So I just always think it's fun to get an outside perspective on what's happening here in Jacksonville and see how people view it. And if it's as, I don't know, reset the culture is pretty good-y.
That was really good.
For a little three-word phrase.
Off the top of his head that
on
fast.
On the spot, live on the radio. He's thinking while he's talking. That was pretty nicely done, I thought. You can share your three words. Doesn't have to be a little phrase. Could be three words that stand alone on their own merit. But you can hit us up on Twitter at MD_1010XL or at IME to the T or on the Jaguars Today Facebook page, phone lines, and the text line built by Lifetime Enclosures at 641-1010. Jaguars Today on 1010XL and 92.5 FM.
You know, I'd say reset the culture. I'm going to go with a phrase there. Again, I don't want to oversell it. You can't talk enough about how important the quarterback position is. It's important to understand that, yes, Nick Foles is not one of those top five, six, seven guys in the NFL that's going to just change everything. But I think he resets the culture enough in Jacksonville, whether that means by just improving the play of quarterback or whether that means instilling some actual leadership in a locker room that needed it.
Now, more Jaguars Today on 1010XL 92.5 FM.
You got a lot of competing interests going on right here, E, at the moment. This is a deep cut, super meta level reference that Emmanuel is going with right here. It's not because we're wondering if the Jaguars will have a season in the sun, metaphorically speaking. We know they'll play in the heat of the day, the sunshine state. But that is a loose reference, man. You got to be a Jacksonville sports radio hardcore listener for the last 20 years almost.
You got some of those too.
There may be one or two people out there that get that reference. That was in reference to something I called Mike DiRocco earlier in the program. Slip of the tongue.
D-Rock.
What's that guy doing these days anyway? Not D-Rock, the other fella.
I don't even know what you're talking about.
I don't either. But anyway, rumor has it we once doubled up on an acapella version of Seasons in the Sun, filling in on the Frangie show oh so many moons ago and networks and stations ago. Anyway, now that everyone is completely confused out there, because like I said, that's a 1% of the 1%, to borrow a phrase from Urban Meyer that I don't know if he wants back, but he should nevertheless. All right, Cody Benjamin with CBS Sports talking about Nick Foles last segment. He is a big upgrade to me on Blake Bortles. Just at least my belief is he will be in terms of consistency. Down in, down out, drive in, drive out. You had those drives, those three. You'd go through a stretch of three and outs with Blake where you thought, he's got no chance. I mean, he's got no chance to complete a five-yard pass. Beat Pittsburgh last year. If he can complete a five-yard pass on third and five, they wouldn't let him throw it. It's third and five, game's on the line. In today's NFL, you don't let your quarterback throw on third and five with a game-clinching first down all you need. That tells you a lot about your confidence level in the quarterback. And I'm not, look, Blake is what he was. He was, I think Cody Benjamin hit it right. At times, he was better than the widespread perception of him. At times, maybe there were some people that wanted that to be the case and that, you know, his most hardcore devotees were a little blind to his flaws. And, you know, you want to be optimistic, right? People covering the team, fans of the team, casual fans, whatever, because this team's been down for so long. And when Blake had the year in his second season, when he threw 35 touchdowns, 4,000-plus yards, you know, franchise records, you wanted to look at the positives. There were certainly people at the time saying, hey, you know what, way too many interceptions, way too much of this, way too much garbage time, whatever the case may be. And there were all kinds of stories and analysis and spreadsheets done on how much was truly garbage time and how much mattered. Well, it all matters to some degree. And then, you know, Blake regressed. It was just the up and down. And then 2017, you saw the stretch late in the season, mostly into the postseason. And I say mostly because, you know, late in the season against Tennessee, didn't play great. Buffalo game, he helped them win it, no question, with his feet. But when your quarterback throws for less than 90 yards in a playoff game, that's not something to hang your hat on, I don't think, as a potential franchise guy, you know. So, anyway, I think Cody said, it might have been him. I was reading a couple pieces about Blake yesterday. I think it was in his piece. He said something along the lines of, he's still tall, he will still fool some team into believing that they can fix him somewhere down the line. I don't know. All right, right now, I would just wish, if I'm going to wish something nice for the Los Angeles Rams, it would be good health for Jared Goff. That's what it would be at this point in time. You know, so we'll see. Todd Gurley, it's another story. We'll get to that coming up in the Roland Reich roll around the National Football League. Speaking of health and the Los Angeles Rams, and I don't know, maybe it's me. I interpreted his trainer's comments yesterday differently than just about everybody else out there. If you want to weigh in today, got a number of ways to do it. Social media questions of the day asking you. One is a poll to rate the Jaguars offseason, given four categories. You just pick one and tell us why. If you choose to tell us why you selected that category, was it an elite offseason, above average, average, or below average? This is done off the story rating the offseason for all 32 NFL teams. Why the Browns are on top at ESPN.com at that Mike DiRocco. You may have heard of him. He does the show with us once a week here. Jaguars Today co-host. From ESPN does a fine job, by the way, reporting on the squad. But they had to place the team they cover in one of those categories. But the last category wasn't below average. It was too soon to tell. I just thought that was too optimistic. I know there are some people out there that think, you know, just the Telvin Smith and the unique stuff and some of the intangible, just like they think it's, I'm not trying to sensationalize it, a little bit like a cauldron that's bubbling a little bit, and you got to be careful. It can simmer. You don't want it to blow the top off and go crazy spilling all over the place. That's a pretty bad example, but you get the idea, I hope, that there's some stuff kind of under the surface a little bit, discontent. That's one of the things Cody Benjamin, CBS, talked about. You know, will the locker room rally around Nick Foles in a way that they might not have wholeheartedly around Blake Bortles? Because you look at Blake, you know, he got his extension, then didn't play well. There was a lot of I think, questioning in that locker room whether he was the guy at times, especially last year as things were going, they were taking a dive in the record, and the defense was being asked to do a lot more because they were out on the field seemingly – at times, just constantly after a three and out, just three and out for three and out. And after a certain point in time, doesn't mean you can't still, you know, buck up and get the job done like they did when they shut out Indianapolis 6-0. But that's a big ask in today's offensive-minded NFL for the defense to play at that level week in, week out.
Mike, would you say that Foles has grit? Because the defense is definitely gritty. But do you think Foles has that grit?
I think he's exhibited grit. Yeah, now, does that mean every week you're going to get the same thing out of him? No, I mean, look, nobody's going undefeated, right? I mean, the Patriots did for a regular season. They ultimately came up short. It's a tough thing to do, so he's not going to be perfect every week, but I do think there's something about him that he's just a guy. He's pretty unassuming. You know, he's not a big, flashy personality, right? He's not the guy who was the first-round pick and had everything handed to him. Even though he had a spectacular season with Philadelphia under Chip Kelly in 2013, he had to kind of go out into the NFL wilderness, you know, and find himself. And he found himself back in Philly, basically buried behind a franchise quarterback with the intent of the team to never play him because you had your guy and he was playing Carson Wentz at an MVP level 2 years ago, gets hurt, and he comes in, does that in the postseason. I think you looked at that and you thought, all right, some guys get hot, right? You get hot at the right time, and you put your name in the record book, never to be heard from again. But then last year, that team wasn't tracking towards the postseason, and Carson Wentz went out again. You know, it was one thing to take over when Wentz had the team playing on all cylinders, and you kind of just didn't want to screw it up. Not that he didn't make plays. I mean, go look at the Super Bowl. That was a track meet up and down the field, and Nick Foles had to constantly answer Tom Brady and vice versa back and forth. But last year, Philadelphia wasn't going anywhere, seemingly. It was going to be a disappointment. And, you know, maybe Philly fans, Philadelphia Eagle fans would have been okay because you just won a Super Bowl for the first time ever. And, you know, look, we want to get back and repeat, but you're still living in the honeymoon phase, so to speak. But he got that team going down the stretch and then didn't light the scoreboard up against Chicago. Chicago had a great defense last year. And on the road, drove them down in position to win the game. I know Cody Parkey was it Parkey? Who was that the kicker for the Bears last year? Is that who I'm thinking of? Do I have that right?
Possibly.
Or am I confusing him with the Eagles kicker right now? I might be doing that. Who was the guy for Chicago who missed the field goal in that game? That's not Nick Foles' fault. You know, honestly, I'm getting off track here a little bit, but it reminds me of the Music City Miracle game.
Cody Parker.
It was
right.
Cody Parker. For some reason, once I said the name, I'm like, wait a minute, does he kick for the Eagles? Why did I do that to myself? The Music City Miracle game where Kevin Dyson got the lateral and took it back against Buffalo in the playoffs for Tennessee.
The tight end. Frank Wycheck.
From Wycheck, okay, right. Yeah. Wycheck throws, and that was in 99, right? And that's ultimately the team that kept the Jaguars from going to the Super Bowl. In that game, Rob Johnson led the Bills down. The reason they were kicking off, Rob Johnson had just driven the Bills in position to win the football game exactly like Nick Foles had done against the Chicago Bears. But an even bigger miracle than a missed field goal, they get that return play, and the rest is history, and they go on to win the AFC Championship. And Rob Johnson's performance on that day is never even noted, right?
I never even thought about that.
He won the game for him. And this was after Doug Flutie had played a large part of that season and Rob Johnson wasn't healthy, which was a concern for him throughout his career. And they put him back in the lineup, and it was kind of like the Jags did in 2005, right? Leftwich is out for a big chunk of the season. Garrard wins a bunch of games, and they throw Leftwich back in for the playoff game. Didn't work out for the Jags. It looked like it was working out for the Bills because Rob Johnson leads them into position. Fast forward to just this past offseason or the past postseason, and Nick Foles does the same against Chicago. If Cody Parkey makes that field goal, you're going, yeah, Nick Foles, he had that great run in 2017, but couldn't win a game last year. You know, it's that, totally out of your hands. It's like Brady. Brady's got however many rings, and Malcolm Butler doesn't make that interception, or if Russell will, or if they hand the ball to Marshawn, whatever you want to say about the end of that game, completely out of Brady's hands. And how he's judged when you're going to post his record of Super Bowl wins versus Super Bowl losses, total appearances, and judging him against the best that ever played the game. And in that instance, he has nothing. He's done all he can, and the game's completely out of his hands. He's put his team in position to win. Defense has to do their job. They did. In that case, but had they not,
it would have been Tom Brady.
It would have been through no fault of his own, but you would have looked at him just slightly differently. I mean, he's done so much that you're not going to, you know, kick him out of the Hall of Fame or anything like that, by the way. By the way, did you realize Ken Brady, our sales manager, right, has a son whose name is Thomas Edward Brady?
Oh, wow.
I played golf with the Bradys this week in the Brady Bunch. And he said, you've never seen disappointment on someone's face until you see a pizza delivery man come to his door and have him open it. Right? Because you're delivering it to Tom Brady. And he lives in Miami. So you could conceivably think, oh, Tom Brady's got a house in Miami. Right? I don't know. And
they really think they're delivering the pizza to Tom Brady?
Apparently some have over time. Whose house is this? Thomas Brady. Huh.
Interesting.
I wonder. Maybe they don't think, but maybe they have that 1% of hope, you know, that they're going to get the tip of a lifetime. But no, they get Ken Brady's kid instead. I did too this weekend. He's a good guy. So there you have it. All right. All over the map. We'll come back. This date in football, the Roland Reich roll around the National Football League. Get to some of your creative three-word suggestions to best describe the Jaguars offseason to this point. Can be a little three-word phrase, three standalone words. Got a couple of social media questions out there. @MD_1010XL, @IME to the T on Twitter, Jaguars Today Facebook page, phone line, and text line. Built by Lifetime Enclosures at 641-1010. And the questions of the day presented by Gravely Zero Turn Mowers, an American workhorse since 1916. Mike Dempsey and E.T. here with you at 1010XL World Headquarters. Jaguars Today on 1010XL 92.5 FM.
And now, this date in football history.
All right, what happened on this date in football history, June the 18th throughout the years? Birthdays, starting with a Hall of Famer, a one-day Hall of Famer, and a guy who's got an outside shot certainly. I'll start with the Hall of Famer, born in the state in 1963, the all-time leading sacker in National Football League history. Don't tell that to Tony Boselli, but today is Bruce Smith's birthday. He is 56 years old today. E, how many Pro Bowls for Bruce Smith, who was the number one overall pick in the 1985 NFL Draft? How many Pro Bowls did he make in his career?
13.
11. That's still an incredibly high amount. Anything in the double digits is in rare company. Eight-time first-team All-Pro, by the way. Two-time NFL Defensive Player of the Year. I'm starting to think the guy Boselli stoned in 96 was pretty good in all the other games, by the way. So Bruce Smith, born on this date, was the all-time winning sacker with 200. Will anyone catch Bruce Smith? Not anytime soon, let me tell you. Here are the guys who are right behind him. Reggie White has passed away. Kevin Green retired. Julius Peppers just retired. Chris Dolman retired. Michael Strahan retired. Jason Taylor, DeMarcus Ware, Richard Dent, John Randall, Jared Allen. You got to go all the way down to Terrell Suggs, tied for 13th all time. T-Sizzle doesn't have that much left in him, and he's at 132.5. Bruce Smith has 200 sacks. So behind Terrell Suggs for active sack men, you got to go down to Von Miller. Von Miller, if he duplicated everything he's done in his career, would be four sacks short of Bruce Smith. So he needs another full Von Miller career on top of what he's already done to get within striking distance of Bruce Smith at the top of the heap. That's your first birthday of note on this date. Bruce Smith, 56. The soon-to-be Hall of Famer, whenever he becomes eligible, I would hope his first year of eligibility. Antonio Gates is an eight-time Pro Bowler, undrafted, as opposed to Bruce Smith being the first overall pick in his draft. Antonio Gates coming out of Kent State, where he played basketball, born in the state 39 years ago, 17th all-time in receptions with 955. That's among all players. He's 12th all-time in touchdowns with 116. That's number one among tight ends. Any tight end, Antonio Gates tops the list. And he's in the top 30, I want to say, in receiving yards as well. Eight-time Pro Bowler, three-time first-team All-Pro, and still considering possibly squeezing out one more season with the Los Angeles Chargers. And a guy who saw to a pretty good start, and way too early to say he's going to end up in the Hall of Fame. Amari Cooper, the fourth pick in the 2015 draft, has made three Pro Bowls in his four seasons in the National Football League. He is 25 years old today. That's what we have for you on this date in football history.
Now, let's roll around the NFL with Roland Reich Plumbing, where quality and experience count.
All right, the Roland Reich roll around the NFL. It is well known that I love me some fantasy football, right?
So that's right.
My thinking sometimes does get skewed to my true passion. Love
mine,
it.
Mine does too, so I know yours,
bro. You know I do, right? Been doing SiriusXM shows for about a decade now, fantasy football shows. Very fortunate to be able to do that. Love it, love it, love it. So when I see this Todd Gurley story, maybe it's me getting him in the middle of the second round in a draft a few weeks ago and thinking, I want that to be a steal, right, instead of a wasted pick. When I see this story that the L.A. Rams trainer talking about Todd Gurley having some kind of arthritic condition in his knee, that's the headline in every story. Trainer confirms arthritic condition in Gurley's knee. But if you read the quote, he says, everybody knew when Todd came out of Georgia, there would be some kind of arthritic component to his knee, which is part of every surgery, whether it's a shoulder, a knee, an ankle. He's now at the year five mark. All we're doing is managing that. If we can pound him less in the offseason, keep his weight down, working on his strength, working on his agility in short areas, that's going to give him a better chance to be healthy weeks 14 through 17 when they really count. He went on to say that I've never been told, or it's never been told to me, that there's a plan to decrease his workload come week one. At the end of the day, you need solid running backs. Talking about Daryl Henderson, who they drafted in the third round. If you watch the games last year, Todd typically sat out 2 to 3 series. I don't see anything changing with that. So this guy's like, yes, he's got a condition. MJD, when I was out on vacation, I forget whether it was NFL Network or just on, it was on in some interview, and he has been the Rams color broadcaster for the radio network, so he's in position to know. It said that Todd Gurley hurt himself. It was undisclosed, as many NFL injuries you may be shocked to learn are, because teams don't want other teams getting an advantage and targeting a specific area of a player's body sometimes. He said he hurt himself. He couldn't remember if it was the first or the second game, but very early in the season, he tweaked something, and it was never right, and he never got a chance to rest it because he had that workload, and that the insinuation was because he hasn't had any surgery in the offseason that an offseason arrest should help him come back, that this was kind of an acute situation, not necessarily all a chronic thing, as the arthritis may suggest. I don't know. I'm not a doctor. I'm just, again, hoping the seventh pick in round two in a 12-team league turns out to be a steal, baby, with Todd Gurley on my roster. So that is story number one out there, interpreted as you will. Number two, Michael Thomas said to be in discussions with the Saints. Mickey Loomis, the general manager, says they have talked about a new discussion. Ian and I were talking about, why doesn't Michael Thomas get mentioned when you mention the best receivers in the league? He does name, his stats stack up favorably. His name doesn't always immediately come to mind when you're talking about whether it's Antonio Brown, Julio Jones, A.J. Green, now Devontae Adams, DeAndre Hopkins, and these guys. Maybe it's the Marcus Colston, Joe Horn effect, you know, that guys that looked like journeyman types made a bunch of Pro Bowls playing with Drew Brees. And then people may say Michael Thomas talent, but a lot of people would put up big numbers playing as the number one in a Drew Brees-led offense. I'm not sure what it is, but I'll take those numbers on my team as well.
If you say A.J. Green, you got to say Michael Thomas.
You would think. I mean, he's productive. A.J. Green's done it longer, though. Don't forget, A.J. Green, he's kind of out of sight, out of mind. Started the year, he scored three touchdowns in like the first 12 minutes of the first quarter last year against Baltimore, and then got hurt in like week two. And who knows what kind of season A.J. Green might have had. And anyway, Michael Thomas, I'm sure, will soon get the details worked out. He'll get a new deal with the Saints. And then finally, kind of an interesting story, curious story, maybe not so interesting. Michael Roberts, tight end, formerly now of the Detroit Lions, was traded a few days ago to the New England Patriots, or at least agreed to in principle, for a late-round pick, maybe some conditional thing. Patriots, obviously, trying to find the Gronk replacement. Not that Michael Roberts would be that guy specifically. By the way, saw Austin Seferian Jenkins got cut, right?
I was kind of surprised by that.
Just kind of out of the blue. What? Didn't he miss like a voluntary day of OTAs or something?
Did he?
It was something like that. There was something like he didn't show up for something, and then boom, he's gone the next day. So ASJ worked out well for the New England Patriots. So Michael Roberts gets traded, and then the trade gets rescinded, and the thinking is that the Patriots failed him on his physical. He didn't pass his physical with the Patriots, so the Lions are like, well, we don't want him. So they cut him, and then the Packers claimed him off waivers. I don't know if the Patriots would have put in the claim. I don't know what the rules are about that. If you say a guy can't pass your physical and then you claim him off waivers, are you allowed to do that?
A little shiesty.
Put it this way. If it is a little shiesty but well within the rules, Patriots would have done it.
Absolutely.
Okay? But the Packers picked him up instead. So maybe not all that interesting, just a curious little saga of the former Lions tight end. And that's what we have for you on the Roland Reich Roll around the National Football League. I do know that I have to watch myself sometimes. My opinions get colored by my hopes and desires. I try to be objective, right? But we all are human. And I want Todd Gurley to be healthy and successful and super productive and all that good stuff. And when I read that with the trainer saying, yeah, look, we've known about this. The guy came into the league with a torn ACL. I mean, we've known there's going to be some kind of management of that knee necessary. And this has been something that we've been doing to some degree every offseason. We'll find out. There's something to it, obviously. I mean, look. He would have got more touches in the Super Bowl. I don't care how well C.J. Anderson played down the stretch. And Sean McVay can blame it on himself, the head coach of the Rams, for not getting him the ball. Clearly, if they felt Todd Gurley was up to a bigger workload. In a game that was as low scoring as that.
It was boring.
But it was screaming. I mean, that's a game where you're never out of it. You never have to abandon the run game, right? So Gurley, who's a big factor in the passing game as well, should have starred in that game, you would have thought. At least should have been a guy up around 25 touches for the Rams, but it was kind of boring.
How deep, as far as fantasy football, how far back did he fall? Did he fall out the first round?
Well, I told you, I had a 12-team draft like right before I went on vacation.
Right.
Did a draft, and he was I had the sixth pick in the draft, and the top four running backs are going to be in whatever order they come off the board: Saquon Barkley, Ezekiel Elliott, Alvin Kamara, and Christian McCaffrey. Don't care what league you're in, 90 9% of leagues, those are the first four picks, unless you're in like a two-quarterback league or something like that. And usually it's Barkley first and then personal preference for the next three. So I'm sitting there at six, and DeAndre Hopkins goes five. I took Devontae Adams, right? Here's my goal, E. Very fascinating to hear about somebody else's. But if you're in the middle of the round, you're going to miss out on those guys. I thought I'm going to take best available, probably a wide receiver at that spot. I was going to come back and take Zach Ertz in the second round because I figured Kelce would be gone because there are very few tight ends that can separate themselves from the pack. And if you have one, it gives you a big edge, in my opinion. And then I was hoping for like a Leonard Fournette or a Marlon Mack or a Damian Williams, something like that in round three for my first running back. Well, so happens I take Adams. I come around, and Gurley slides all the way out of the first round, and he slides to the seventh pick of round two. And this is like 3 weeks ago, before the arthritic everything, although that's been whispered about for a while. And it was too good to pass up, so I took him there. And then Ertz fell to me all the way in the middle of round three, so it was a beautiful thing. So we'll see. Now you care even less, I'm sure, now about my fantasy fortunes.
I'm watching you because I'm doing the Jags Today League this year, so I gotta feel you out.
Oh yeah, I'll be all over the map by then. I'll have drafted out of every position. We've had eight leagues. I'll pat myself on the back. We've had eight leagues. I wasn't the grand champion last year. We had three leagues last year. You had the three champs. We took their semi and championship week combined scores and declared them the grand champion. And but we've had eight leagues in the last 3 years. I was just saying your boy may have won four. Right? So I'm ready for you. Let's put it that way. Tyler Devitt is gone.
Tony won one also, right?
He may have.
I thought Tyler and Tony won one.
Not last year. I think Tyler might have won one last year is what it was. So we'll have to invite him back. Never mind. We'll still have a spot for you. Don't worry. It'll all be good. All right. We will come back. We'll get to, as I mentioned, some of your responses to one of our questions of the day today, which is presented by Gravely Zero Turn Mowers, an American workhorse since 1916. Which three words do you think best describe the Jaguars all season to this point? Mike Dempsey, Emmanuel Thalerand here with you, Jaguars Today, on 1010XL and 92.5 FM.
I think we've made tremendous strides. You know, communication is definitely way better. People are getting a feel for each other. You know, it's a different kind of personnel out there. You know, so people are just getting the vibe of, you know, where this person is going to be on these certain plays, and you know where your help is going to be and stuff like that. So I think we're doing pretty good right now.
Now more Jaguars Today on 1010XL 92.5 FM.
That's Ronnie Harrison, Jaguars' starting strong safety now. He was at the end of the year as well. They released Barry Church and made the move to go with the rookie last year. I wonder, E, as he spoke last Thursday after training camp, or minicamp concluded, I should say. So I will, after minicamp concluded. Talking about the communication's much better. How much of that is that when you're a rookie at this time last year, you probably we're missing a few things, right? Like, you're just hoping, am I in the right spot? Do I have a guy who can kind of nudge me over? So there's probably a little bit of the aspect of he just feels like he's understanding things and things are flowing a little bit better. Hard for me to believe that communication can be that much better on that side of the ball when you lose your two most experienced safeties.
Both safeties are new, right?
Both safeties are new starting safeties because Gibson's in Houston now, and Church is out on as a street free agent at the moment, I believe, still. And, you know, so you got two new guys. I know Jared Wilson's been around for a while, but he didn't have that starting experience. And Telvin's out of the mix as well. And some would argue that Telvin was himself out of position too often last year. And I get that, but you're taking a half decade of institutional memory of how this defense is supposed to be played and called, and we heard a lot about that last year. Communication, it's communication issues, and we heard a lot of players, former players like Tom McManus and others, who said it seems like a bunch of bunk. That seems like something that's rudimentary that should be solved fairly quickly. So we'll see. Needs to be better. Can't have whatever you want to call them, the broken assignments where guys are just running free out there, no matter who's responsible for some of those guys. I had this one on Twitter. I want to get to some of these responses to the three words that best describe your offseason, but talking about Ken Brady's kid, Thomas Edward Brady, and how it's not the multi – what's Brady got, five Super Bowl rings or six?
Six.
Is it six rings? Vomit. That's – anyway, Dan, Law of the Gator on Twitter says, I said, you know, the anecdote that the other – Thomas Edward Brady said to me was, you don't know disappointment until you've seen the face of the pizza delivery man when he opens the door when they think they're delivering a pizza to Tom Brady. Don't know how, you know, frequently that really happened, that guys thought this might be the real Tom Brady. But I thought, you know, the guy's thinks he's getting a tip of a lifetime. And Dan replies, pro athletes don't tip any better than anyone else on average. My question would be, how do you know? I mean, how do you really know that? Maybe you do. Maybe there's some study that's been done on that. I would say, because we've heard stories. Remember Roy Williams, the receiver for the Lions?
Yeah.
Notorious that he wouldn't tip, or he tipped like a dollar on like a $100 bill, you know, a charge or whatever.
Okay.
And he had a reputation as nobody wanted to take pizza to Roy Williams, like in Detroit, because if you lived in the area or delivered from the area where he lived, you knew you were going to get stiffed. Even just on a regular tip, right? So I'm sure there are guys like that in every walk of life and ladies like that. But I would think if I were going to say, here's the average population, whatever it is, and here's the pro athlete pool, and if you could know out of all the pizza deliveries in a one-year time, how many times do you get a $50 tip or higher, or like that $100 bill when the bill is like $100 or whatever. I would think that that happens more with pro athletes. But again, if you take the whole population, there are a lot of rich people out there.
A lot of them.
Obviously, right? A lot of poor people as well, or just average people, and they're tipping 15% or $2 or whatever they feel is a reasonable tip. And I would expect... more often that if I was going to get that $100 tip, it'd more likely come in this town from Calais Campbell than it would from John Doe, you know, or whoever that may be. I don't know, but you hear that about that. I'm sure there are people that have stories about getting stiffed here in Jacksonville and also being overwhelmed with
a large,
an amazing tip. And you know, right, if you're a pizza delivery guy, $100, I would imagine, makes your night, man, right?
It made my night. I'm not a pizza guy.
I'll take $100 right now,
right,
and
now
I'll just call it a day. I'll see you later. You can have the final 36 minutes of the program. Chad on Twitter said Devontae over Kelsey. It was the whole idea that I could get Ertz in round two, and then I got him in round three, and that made the thing right. Devontae's the only guy among wide receivers, I think he's the only one among wide receivers, scored double-digit touchdowns the last 3 years running. Don't expect that to change anytime soon. Kelsey is indefinitely in the second half of the first-round consideration. And I've drafted him like as high as 8 this year in some of those best ball drafts.
Why do y'all draft so early?
Why not? What are you going to do? Not draft?
Got to wait till after, you know, all those camps and everything.
No, you
after
don't.
Preseason.
No, you know, you have as much information as anybody else. And if you follow it closely, you know, I mean – you're not drafting now unless you feel prepared to draft. You know what I mean? It's a long off season, man. There's a lot of downtime, bro. What am I going to do? I'm here till noon, E. As a matter of fact, I need to check to see if I'm on the clock because I got auto-picked yesterday coming off vacation, man.
How mad were you when you got auto-picked?
You know, here's the thing. I would never take Patrick Mahomes in round 4, but that's what I got auto-picked. And I wasn't that upset. I started my team. I had like the 9th pick. I started with Le'Veon Bell at 9, came back with Michael Thomas, which was sweet. I got Marlon Mack late 3rd, which I think the workload's there for him in Indy. And I came back around and I got Patrick Mahomes. I won't have him on maybe any other teams this year that I pay attention to because people draft quarterbacks way too early.
Oh, yeah, and then the trickle effect.
Right, there's so many. You get if you take the 12th quarterback off the board, the difference between 1 and 12 generally, or 2 or 3 and 12. Like Mahomes last year, if you're going to throw 50 touchdowns again, I'll take that in round 2, please, you know, and that justifies. But the odds are, I would bet, if you put right now Patrick Mahomes over under 35.5 touchdowns, which way would you go?
I'd probably go over.
I might go over. All right, what about 40 and a half?
Yeah, I'd probably go under.
See, it's in that range, right? And last year he threw 50, and you took him in the 10th round or wherever you got him, and he made your team because he was, you know, that first round value at a crazy value. But is Tyreek Hill going to play this year? I don't know. Sammy Watkins going to stay healthy this year? I don't know. They don't have Kareem Hunt. I know Damian Williams looked good down the stretch. Travis Kelce, that's why Travis Kelce's in the first round consideration, because he's going to get all the targets. Mahomes is going to be fantastic. I don't doubt that. Marino went way down. Marino had that 48 touchdown season. Now you're going way back here, but
you play fantasy football when Dan Marino was playing?
Well, at the tail end of his career, before the Jags retired him 62-0.
Right.
I don't know if you heard about that one.
Oh yeah.
Dan Marino went out in shutout fashion. Yeah, I started playing like in 98, maybe something like that.
It was
like
brand new around.
Actually,
there.
I started playing. USA Today had a game where you literally had to mail in or call in, like on a toll call, your lineup changes. It was crazy. It was like a salary cap game. Like you check the box, you had X amount, and you had to have a quarterback. You know, had all the positions filled up, but you had a little, whatever the salary cap was, every player had a price. And every week, based on their performance and popularity, the paper would have a whole page devoted to all the names, and you would set your lineup for that week, and you're playing against the field. It wasn't like a head-to-head thing. So I played that for years in the 90s, and then started playing with Joe C. in Joe C.'s little home league back in 98, dating myself now. All right, let me get to some of these three-word responses, see what ones tickle your fancy here. In terms of describing the Jaguars offseason, on the text line, which is built by Lifetime Enclosures, to be determined. Okay, that's fair. It better work. Same person sent those in. Or what? What is the outcome if it doesn't work? I don't know. You'll be disappointed. Here's one. Elite quarterback acquired. Let's hope so, man.
Elite, though?
Elite's a strong, right? I mean, let's not go down the whole Joe Flacco debate. He did win the Super Bowl, like Flacco did. He's played at an elite level in the postseason the last couple of years. Nick Foles, obviously. I would not overall put him in the elite category. Welcome back, Mike. As a token of appreciation for your return, I thought it would be nice to share an old Tennessee Titan fans family recipe. Any idea what the recipe is for?
No clue.
It is for broiled mayonnaise.
I'm good.
Broiled mayonnaise. You get a cup full of that delicious creamy white egg-based substance. You take one egg white, beaten stiff. Right? I don't know. Is that a technical cooking term? Like if you go to culinary school, do they teach you how to beat an egg white stiff? Maybe they do. It may be a common thing. Take a little lemon juice, salt, and pepper to taste, and then you basically mix this all up. Do not attempt to bake this. Serve with asparagus, spinach, etc. Well, wait a minute. Fold the beaten egg white into the mayo, season well, pour into a shallow oven-proof casserole or pie plate, and brown lightly under the broiler. What in the world? Man, they're getting fancy with their mayo consumption over there in Tennessee these days. So thank you for that recipe. Back to three-word descriptions of the Jaguars all season. Yay, functional quarterbacking. That's good. Let's see. Spirals are back. All about Foles. There we go. Let's see. Someone said they enjoyed Cody Benjamin coming on from CBS Sports. If you missed him, he's got an article up at CBSSports.com about can Nick Foles save the Jags, pros and cons, and what defining what saved them would mean. Is it on demand already, or it's going to be after the show?
Show first, that'll be posted afterwards.
Oh, beauty. Focus on the show here. Reset the culture is what he went with. I put him on the spot, and he believes the major component of resetting the culture is bringing in Nick Foles, who is a proven, battle-tested postseason performer. I hesitate to say, you know, proven winner, because he's had his good seasons, and then he had that whole, it's kind of Kurt Warner-esque, but not with the peaks of Kurt Warner, right? Like, Kurt Warner came out of the gates blazing guns, looked like, how could they have all missed on this guy, right? He was league MVP, They win the Super Bowl, greatest show on turf with the Rams. And then he goes and quarterbacks the Giants, and he's like the definition of mediocrity or worse. And then he goes to Arizona, and he has a career renaissance.
Went back to the Super Bowl, right?
He went back to the Super Bowl. Probably should have won that Super Bowl.
Should have won it, yeah.
Somebody pushed James Harrison out of bounds. How are you going to let him go 100 yards with no time on the clock at the end of the half?
Where are all the skill players?
Unbelievable. I went to that. I was lucky enough to go to that Super Bowl. That one and the one the Giants beat the undefeated Patriots. Probably the two best games that I've seen in person in the Super Bowl anyway. But will Nick Foles reset the culture? Let's see. Committing fewer turnovers. Describing the offseason. I guess so. Right, again, that goes right back to Foles, right? I had to think about that for a second. You don't commit turnovers in the offseason, and they're anticipating without the with the ball spinning on its proper axis coming out of the quarterback's hand, that will lead to fewer turnovers. Jags have a quarterback. So much of this all about Nick Foles, right? And that really probably colors your perception. No tip in Scottie Pippen. He was also renowned for being a very poor tipper. But there are poor tippers in every walk of life, I would argue. I would just think that you're more likely to get the C note from somebody who's, you know,
somebody who
works in the toy store of life, you know, in the sports department. Let's see. What else we got here? I'm a generous tipper. Don't need to be. That's me. I'm just a pool tech. My minimum tip is 5, even if I just get a drink. I couldn't imagine if I was rich what my minimum would be. So Steve's saying I'm a solid tipper regardless, but if he had the money, he'd probably be even more generous. So who knows? I don't know. I can't speak for all the rich athletes out there. And what can I tell you? I try to tip reasonably.
Accordingly.
Accordingly, right? According to the quality and speed of my service.
Absolutely. It has to be based off the quality of the service.
It can't be. Like, I honestly, though, if I go to a restaurant and it's bad, I'll almost still tip them 15%. Like, we had a really bad server in Washington.
Still give them the minimum?
I just, you know, I don't know, man. You feel like you're such a bum. But yeah. You're probably, you know, you're well within your role. I don't know.
It's a tough situation.
I'm just thinking about my most recent one in D.C. The server, it was like, man, sometimes those servers hover over you, and it's like, yes, it's fine. Yes, this bite is fine. Yes, the next bite is fine, right? It all tastes good. No, everything's good so far, 3 hours into the meal. Thank you. And then you get the guy who you just can't get his attention or the young lady, whatever the case. We had one of them, still getting 15%. Because I'm that guy, E. I'm so good. Pat me on the back. All right, we'll come back and get deep into your responses to our dueling questions of the day presented by Gravely Zero Turn Mowers, an American workhorse since 1916. Jaguars today on 1010XL 92.5 FM. Hey folks, Mike Dempsey here. Don't let that cool air escape outside unless you want it to. Pella Windows and Doors can help protect your home from Florida's unpredictable weather. Check them out. They offer durable wood, fiberglass, and vinyl products in various styles and designs. And they're booming their business so much that they're even hiring right now. To best compliment your home, visit the Pella of Jacksonville showroom on Phillips Highway. They're right next to Tesla. You can find them online at PellaJax.com. You got to stay cool in the Florida summers. You're paying for that air. Keep it inside. Protect your home with Pella Windows and Doors.
Jaguars today from the Jacksonville Orthopedic Institute Studios.
JOI, where the pros go. If you bleed teal and black, we've got your back.
We are Jaguars!
1010XL 92.5 FM, home of the Jaguars.
Metro Rooter Plumbing is not gimmicky and doesn't have a cute tagline. Metro Rooter Plumbing is always professional, no exceptions. Metro Rooter Plumbing will diagnose solutions to fix wasteful, harmful, or unsafe plumbing problems. The diagnosis is free, and if you feel comfortable, they'll begin work right away. If you'd prefer to hold off, that's okay too. Metro Rooter Plumbers are not high pressure, they're just good quality plumbers. Google Metro Rooter to schedule your appointment. They even offer same-day service, including Saturday and Sunday. MetroRooter.com.
Hey guys, it's Rick Ballew. You know, my friends at McGowan's keep your home and business cool. They want to give you and 49 of your best friends tickets to the coolest seats in football. Go to McGowansAC.com and enter to win a pool cabana for a Jaguars preseason game. From the Georgia border to Palm Coast, folks, trust McGowan's AC, the official heating and air conditioning partner of the Jacksonville Jaguars. Call 264-COOL or visit McGowansAC.com.
License number CMC125-0075.
Secure your parking spot for this season by logging on to tailgatersparking.com. You'll be securing your spot for another big football season, including the Eagles game on August 15th. Grab your parking spot today for the Florida State game on August 31st against Boise State. Tailgaters Parking.
Helmets and Heels, built by Dreamfinders Homes and presented by Underwood Jewelers and American Window Products.
Tuesday nights at 6 on 1010XL.
Now more Jaguars today on 1010XL 92.5 FM.
I think I've taken too many blows to the head, even though I never played football. You know, I was a basketball, baseball guy.
Yeah, Big Thunder down under. What was your nickname in basketball?
The
Black Hole or something.
That's kind of unofficial, yeah. The ball came into me. The gravitational pull did not allow it to come back out. Okay? If you get it to me, I will force it up over the double team. And they're only double-teaming me because they know I'm not passing it, all right? It wasn't like you needed a double-team necessarily to stop me, even on my good day. But, no, it was not coming back out. But somewhere along the line, I've accrued some minor blows to the cranium. 62-7, of course. They retired Dan Marino,
right,
and Jimmy Johnson in that game. Excuse me, Dolphin fans. It's hard to remember when it was 41-0 in the second quarter when you got on the board, all right? But thank you, and promptly on the text line, built by Lifetime Enclosures. I'm just hitting all the plugs today, E, is what I'm doing.
You're solid, man.
But no, 62-7 should be burned and etched in my mind. Dolphins got on the board with 1 second left in the first half on a 20-yard pass. They passed up that cosmetic field goal, you know, like, let's just break it. You know, it's more embarrassing to kick the field goal than it is to get shut out.
It is.
Go for the touchdown, and if you score the touchdown, fine. Keep trying. Don't kick the field goal just to take the zero off. Speaking of the zero, right? I was up in Manhattan, and I wanted to tell this little anecdote. Doesn't deal with our football directly, but I'm up in Manhattan, and on an area of Broadway, walking with my wife and son, called the Avenue of the Americas, and that's where SiriusXM has their headquarters in New York. They're up on, 36th floor, I think, of this. And so I text my program director, hey, I'm on your block, right? And he's like, whoa, get out of here. What are you doing here? And he knew I was on vacation. And so, man, you got to talk about some security. Like, they got to put you in the system. They print, everyone's got to get a card printed out, show ID, you know, and the card, like, you'll say, I'm going to visit Matt Deutsch, my program director at SiriusXM. And so the card has a little barcode. And it goes in the elevator, and that will only take you to the 36th floor then. Right? It will not take you anywhere else. So anyway, go up there. And I'd been in the building once before, but I'd never gotten a tour from him. So he's I see some people I know at NFL Radio, and he's showing me where NBA Radio and MLB. And the funny thing is, you know, hardly any of the hosts work out of there. Right? They all work wherever they live. And in the case of our network, the Fantasy Network, he's basically the only guy. He's the anchor. All the producers work out of the D.C. hub. So, like, when I do a show on Sirius, my producer's in Washington, D.C. My co-host is in Albuquerque, and I'm back in good old St. A. And it works fine. You know, it's just the way radio's done now. So, anyway, I'm up there, and he's introducing me to different stations, hosts, and bosses, whatever. So he brings me to the guy who he shares an office with, who runs SiriusXM FC, which is the soccer channel, football channel, right? So what do I know about the state of soccer right now, except for the fact that the American ladies put that whipping on Thailand 13-0, right?
And so, celebrated their butts off.
And celebrated their butts off, much to the dismay of all the little panty waists, okay? So I say to the guy, wow, pretty impressive. The ladies win 13-0. And then I go, oh, I guess I should say 13-0, right? Because you hear everybody on soccer broadcast saying that. And he goes, funny you should say that, right? So for all you soccer people out there, I'm at the risk of offending you right now. He says, you know what there is? There's a whole thing with American soccer fans that want to be a little bit above it all. Like, if you don't know, if you don't speak the lingo, you're not as cool as us or whatever. And this is the guy who runs the whole network, right? So he goes, when I first got this job, and he mentioned the guy, I can't think of his name, as an English soccer broadcaster. He said, you should not say nil. He goes, that's not a soccer term. He goes, that's just the way British people talk. He goes, you're not British. Don't talk like a British person. Say nothing. Say zero, whatever. He goes, it's not a soccer thing. It's a British thing. He goes, and furthermore, never say pitch. He goes, we call everything a pitch. He goes, hockey players play on a hockey pitch. Has nothing to do with what kind of field. It's wherever the field of play of competition, that's a pitch. It's just it's not a soccer term. It's a British term. He goes, unless you're British, call it a field. You're American, call it a field. So for all you people out there with your soccer scarves on right now, it's not a pitch, and it's not nil unless you're British, all right? So I will get off my soapbox right now, and I will root the Americans on. Who are they playing? Sweden next? Is that who they're playing? Beef knows. Beef, they got Sweden next, I believe, in the round-robin round. He has no idea what's going on there. I think Beef just gave me the finger as he walked by. As a matter of fact, that's a typical day around 1010XL, at least for me. I get that reaction. All right, here's some. Today we asked dueling questions of the day, E. Let me first go to the poll and see where things stand. This Bianchi by, here I go again, Bianchi. DiRocco, that's the theme of the day right there. I told you I've taken too many blows to the head. I don't know where they come from. And my wife may do it to me when I'm asleep. If I were her, it seems like a reasonable thing to do. Anyway, Mike DiRocco at ESPN, he's the guy who writes for ESPN. I don't know what happened to the other guy. Anyway, ESPN asked the correspondents for each team to rate whether that team had an elite, above average, average offseason, or whether it was too soon to tell. Well, it's always too soon to tell when it comes to the offseason. But the only team that got voted as having an elite offseason was the Cleveland Browns, in large part because they got Odell Beckham Jr., they picked up Kareem Hunt. Well, however you may feel about that in terms of a football move, it was pretty savvy to add him to that backfield halfway through the season. The Jags actually came in at above average and leaning heavily on the Foles acquisition. At least I'm assuming that's through the eyes of Mike DiRocco, who writes for ESPN.com. ESPN DiRocco is where you'll find him on Twitter, Emmanuel, in case you're wondering. 45% voted for the Jags having an above average offseason. 43% said it was average, 8% said below average. And I guess that is the group that is worried about Telvin's absence and Yannick Ngakoue's contract situation. I mean, those are the major negatives, right? They seem to have, by most corners, killed the draft, at least at the very tip top of the draft, you know, getting Josh Allen and then getting Juwan Taylor, a guy that many thought they might take in the first round. So the other thing was, we asked you again, presented by Gravely Zero Turn Mowers, an American workhorse since 1916, three words to best describe the Jaguar offseason. Here are a few. Everyone calm down. That's from Connor, the Jack Knight on Twitter. Red zone finish. Hope there's a lot of them. A 27, stay healthy and contribute to that as well. Slim to none. Not sure what exactly, like, I guess the Jags' chances, maybe you think going forward. Playoffs or rebuild? Ooh, man. Rebuild. They have way too many young guys to think about that word right now. I'll choose playoffs, please. Here's another one. Three words. Foles, holdouts, nutcase. I'll leave you to determine who they're talking about. Let's see. G's, sigh, phew. That was in regards to the end of the season, the draft, and OTAs. Why sigh for the draft? I thought the draft was pretty good. Instead of suck for luck, sucks for luck. That's not bad, right? It's pretty clever. Give me three words, E. You can't use reset the culture because Cody Benjamin did that on No Time to Think.
Solid season ahead.
Solid season ahead. Honestly, Leon Searcy likes that one. He gave you the point. That's not the same finger Beef pointed at me a moment ago, by the way. My first inclination this morning was Foles, Foles, Foles. That's what it comes down to. to me. I mean, you made the major quarterback upgrade. Spirals are back. That's another one. However you want to – just more consistency at the quarterback position dwarfs everything else that they've done this offseason. There's been some good, been some bad. There always is. And honestly, too soon to tell is probably always the right response. But if I had to choose one, I hope it's above average because I don't think many teams have a chance to improve their quarterback position with a guy who's done it at the NFL level to the degree that Jags hopefully have this offseason. Let's check in with Big Leon.
Now, the two-minute drill, delivered by Moe's Southwest Grill.
Welcome to Moe's!
At Moe's, our caterings come with a heaping side of peace of mind, not to mention the free chips and salsa, delivery, and setup. Visit Moe'sCateringFL.com.
All right, XL Primetime in the house. What's up, Big Leon? How are you?
What's going on, Money Mike?
You tell me, from your perspective, just knowing guys, take yourself out of this, okay? Pro athletes, better tippers than average, worse tippers than average, or about the same as everybody else?
Better tippers than
better average. Tippers.
Always was. I know you say take myself.
Well, I didn't want to put you on the spot. And,
I've always been an outstanding tipper.
You're an outstanding tipper.
Outstanding.
Then.
At least 50, 60% when I was playing.
Wow. That's good.
That's pretty good.
All right, because you had the bank, right?
Yeah.
Now, that's kind of what I said. I don't think – I'm sure there are some guys and some guys – Scottie Pippen had a reputation, never tipping anybody. No tipping Scottie Pippen.
Really?
Roy Williams, the receiver for the Detroit Lions. I remember a story came out once. He'd give the pizza delivery guy $1.
That's terrible. That's right? Terrible. That's awful.
And he was top 10 pick, Leon.
And you wonder why people spitting your food.
But at the same, exactly, right? Like, that'd be the last time I'd ever order from that place, because especially now, because it's all computerized. But that, certainly there's some bad guys on that end, but if you're looking for the C note or the $50 tip, I got to believe the pro athlete's delivering that more than the general public.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
All right. Give me three words. It can be a phrase. It can be three individual words. Three words that you think best describe the Jaguars offseason so far.
Jags are money.
Jags are money. All right. You're an
optimist.
They spent
a lot of it as well, too.
They did. You always do, right?
Exactly.
$22 million. Look, the salary cap's almost $200 million these days, man. That money's got to go to somebody, right?
Somebody.
Will it go to Jan? Will he get – what do you think – how's it going to play out? Will he get a deal done before the season, in season? Will he have to wait till after this year? What do you think?
I think he's going to get a deal done before the season.
You do?
Yeah, I do.
All right, you're an optimist, man.
I am very optimistic.
I hope you're right.
I am, too.
I hope you're right.
Unless you're going to go with a rookie come start week one.
Well, I think he'll play regardless.
Yeah.
But if you know, I think the Jags would like to keep him, but – it's all about leverage, right?
Well, it's all about what they feel he's worth. $100 million is a lot of money.
It is a lot of money. Leon, have a great show.
Appreciate
it. It will be a $100 million show, and Leon will then tip you $50 million at the end of the next 3 hours because he is a 50%, maybe even up to 60% if you get it there really quick, and it's still piping hot. All right, Leon Searcy, ladies and gentlemen, along with Joe C. Hacker and Matt Hayes. XL Primetime coming your way. I think I said all of their names right. I didn't get them confused with any other people in the media who share the same first name?
No, I think you got that one right.
What about my boy D-Rock? How mad is he? Well, first of all, you're probably not listening, all right, because Tony's not here. And he's like, I'm not listening to Dempsey go solo. So he probably is unaware at this point unless somebody has
– on Twitter.
Yes, passed that along on social media. So, by the way, I am E to the T is where you need to hop on board and follow Emmanuel Thalerand. Still just criminally low.
It's creeping up there.
What do you got right now?
Maybe about 170.
Get at it. 170.
I just recently tweeted, like, I have to start tweeting more.
If every pro athlete who you are on a first-name basis with followed you on Twitter, you would double your Twitter follows instantly, at least.
If every pro athlete that I know, like, shouted me out on
just
their Twitter.
Just, hey, give my man Emmanuel a follow.
I would probably have more than all of them, like, put together.
I know you know a lot of guys.
If all of their followers followed me.
Oh, if all of their followers followed, yeah. But, you know, it's only going to be like 1% of them would do it.
Absolutely.
But still, you'd be way up there in the six figures.
Let's get it cranking up.
All right, let's do this. All right, that's on you. All right. Hey, don't forget, after XL Primetime, Tony and Lauren, Philip Heilman, Lauren Rue will be in doing the Frangie Show as they are all week. So Tony and I will be reunited, and it will feel so good coming up next Monday. I am Herb in that scenario, though, just letting you know how that one will play out. All right, that's going to do it for Jaguars today. I'll try to get more names correct tomorrow, and try to get the most important scores in team history correct as well. I got the 62, Emmanuel. Isn't that the important thing after all? All right, that'll do it for us today. I am Mike Dempsey for Emmanuel Thalloran. Stick around. XL Primetime is next. Jaguars Today, 10 to noon tomorrow on 1010 XL and 92.5 FM.
Yo, Jacksonville, let's go to the...